Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm bestselling author and co-creator of realeverything.com, Stacy Toth. I focus on being healthy inside and out through real life, food, and talk.
I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne, New York Times bestselling author and creator of thepaleomom.com. I'm passionate about improving scientific literacy around public health topics.
I like hashtags and bone broth.
And I'm just a super nerd.
Welcome back, listeners, to the Paleo View. Hi, Sarah.
Welcome home. You must be exhausted.
Thank you. And yes, I've officially hit a wall yesterday. You know when your body is just like, okay, I need a break. And fortunately for me, that was the end of my travel. But hitting that wall and then getting on a red eye and coming home, because I've traveled twice in 1 month now, and then I'm also in doing a big project for my day job that is consuming a lot of my energy. So I'm a little bit like, oh, I need energy. And I'm wondering, Sarah, do you think I should have some celery juice?
Oh my gosh. Maybe. How about
we need a whole show to figure that out?
How about we thoroughly discuss the nuances of the health benefits of celery, and then maybe we can draw a conclusion at the end.
That sounds like a smart idea.
Celery juice is this new fad, and it is all over the internet. There's all kinds of, I guess they're influencers. It's interesting because influencers kind of fall under various categories. So I would say the category of influencer who, basically look really beautiful and tell you all their very, secrets to looking so beautiful. And then everybody wants to follow, do what they do to look that beautiful, that sort of brand of influencer, have been basically expounding on celery juice as being this like secret to amazing health, and it will cure all of these things. I wrote down a list of like all of the claims that are being made of celery juice. So you're supposed to drink a 16-ounce glass of just straight celery juice on an empty stomach every morning. And within just 1 week, Stacey, 1 week, you will restore your gut health, you'll improve your digestion, you'll reduce inflammation, you'll improve your autoimmune diseases, you'll starve out all the bad bacteria, you'll flush out viruses, you'll balance your body's pH, you'll detox your liver, you'll clean your blood, because you know you have dirty blood, and you will hydrate on a deep cellular level, you'll eliminate migraines, and you'll reduce depression and anxiety, and you'll think clearly and reverse brain fog, and you'll have an amazing mood. Like all of this is all of these claims around celery juice. So it's no wonder that we have been inundated with comments on social media saying what is the absolute truth behind this?
It's interesting to me. I have seen so much of the same thing as you with celery juice. And one of the things that was interesting to me when we were talking about it is the science is a little bit different on celery when it's juiced than with some of the other things that we've referred to when we talk about juicing. And so, why celery in particular, are there claims that it has these huge amount of benefits? I mean, beyond just the nutrient density of consuming vegetables, which if you go back to our episode, I think from 2 weeks ago, you'll hear why we recommend souping instead, or even smoothies with whole fruits and vegetables, where you're getting, a complete nutrient profile with fiber and the different kinds of things that help your body properly absorb the nutrients that are in vegetables. But when you and I were kind of talking about it, it was interesting to me that the science is a little different when it comes to celery and juicing, and where this idea of it being set apart as this magical cure-all comes from.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that was really interesting to me as I dove into the scientific literature. Celery, along with, you know, dozens of other vegetables and fruit and herbs and spices, and right, there's a ton of different plants that have been really heavily studied for their phytochemicals. So phytochemicals include a huge variety of sort of bioactive chemicals that are in plants that generally, when we consume those plants, they act as antioxidants in our body, but they can have a whole pile of other beneficial effects. So many of them are anti-inflammatory. Many of them have anti-cancer effects. So they can reduce DNA mutations. They can cause cancer cells to die. They can improve cellular health, for example. They can facilitate DNA repair. So there's all of these different effects that phytochemicals can have, and generally they're beneficial, right? So there's this huge range of scientific research showing the more of these antioxidant phytochemicals, right, compounds like polyphenols that we consume, the lower our risk of disease in general, and maybe even having like a life-extending factor, so potentially improving longevity. So celery is one of like many plants that are being evaluated for their phytochemicals, and there's a lot of research looking at concentrating the phytochemicals from celery in order to achieve a therapeutic effect. So this is really in drug discovery research. Most of this, it falls under that banner. So where researchers are trying to identify what the actual chemical structures are of all these different phytochemicals. There's over 10,000 different phytochemicals that have been identified so far. And researchers are trying to tease out, okay, which ones do what? And can we then take that or that combination of, say, 10 of them and create a drug out of it that will reduce inflammation or help help people who are going through chemotherapy, or maybe it'll be a new cancer drug, right? So like there's some really interesting research being done in these compounds, but most of it isn't from the standpoint of like, hey, everyone should be drinking celery juice every morning. Most of it's done from the standpoint of like, can we isolate these compounds and turn them into a drug? So that I think is really, really important to keep in mind as we talk about some of this really interesting research, is that it's not really designed to label celery juice as a superfood. It is much more designed to understand how the phytochemicals in celery may benefit us and understand the mechanisms behind that in order to then turn that into a drug or a supplement. But celery is, you know, it is interesting. There's actually a lot of research. I spent way longer than I anticipated reading through the research. And it's actually has some really interesting compounds in it. So I wanted to sort of take a step back and say celery is part of the parsley family. So it's not, you know, as I was first diving into this, I'm like, well, what is it related to? Because when we think about lettuce, right, there's tons of different varieties of lettuce. And we think about cabbage, and there's like all these different varieties of cabbage. And then we know that, you know, cabbage is related to Brussels sprouts. They have a similar look to it. But I was trying to think of like what looks like celery. And I was like, not that many things, but then I realized that it's actually part of the parsley family and the leaves actually look similar. It's just that you don't normally buy just celery leaves. I mean, it's a traditional ingredient in sort of Thai cuisine, but in North America, for example, typically when you're buying celery, you're buying the celery stalk. But the parsley family is actually a very large family of vegetables, and it includes things like carrots and dill and parsnips and fennel, cilantro, cumin, some things that you would not consume like poison hemlock, but it is a fairly large family and there are a lot of different foods that are normal foods that you would, you know, have in an average, even carrots and parsnips, you know, you would even have that sort of in an average, you know, standard American diet, although not as much as we're consuming in our veggie-rich paleo diets, but they're, you know, pretty normal, boring vegetables. So celery is part of this family, and one of the things that we'll talk about is there's often nutrition in common within a family of vegetables, especially when it comes to phytochemicals. Now, taking still with our step backwards a little bit about what celery is, celery is actually a really nutrient-dense food. Defining nutrient density as having a lot of essential and non-essential nutrients per calorie. Celery is like a superstar. So a 100-gram serving, which is sort of a typical one serving of vegetables, it's about a cup if you chopped up celery. That's not very much. It's really only maybe like two stalks of celery. It has only 16 calories, so that's almost nothing, but has 1.6 grams of fiber, which is pretty great. It has 37% of the RDA vitamin K. It has like 7 or 8 or 9% of vitamins A through carotenoids, vitamin C and folate, potassium and manganese. And then it still has, right, like 3, 4% of pretty much all the rest of the B vitamins, B1, B2, B3, B5, and B6. There are no plant sources of B12. It has a good amount of vitamin E, calcium, copper, iron, magnesium, phosphorus, and zinc. So it actually, you know, it's easy to think of celery as being the sort of filler food because its flavor is not that strong. We tend to use it as an aromatic in soups, right? We often will start a dish with onions and celery and carrots. It just seems sort of ubiquitous. You know, when we're eating it raw, we dip it in something to give it more flavor. We put, you know, nut butter in the inside, right? We've got all these different ways of eating celery that are adding flavor to it and using celery more as a vessel rather than thinking of it as a superstar nutrient dense food. But when you actually dig into the nutrients in celery, it's actually really impressive how much vitamin and mineral content you get and fiber content for not very much volume and very, very few calories.
It's interesting to me because one of the urban legends and myths that I hear about celery is that you actually burn more calories chewing it than you do, I don't know, anyway, consuming it, right? Like right. And from what I hear you saying is that you do get a huge bang for your buck when it comes to celery as a complete vegetable. I guess what I'm kind of curious about is that a true urban myth? Do you know? But B, what else is the real benefits of celery that might be a trigger for where this rumor of it being special comes from, in addition to all of the, you know, kind of RDA type vitamins and minerals?
Right. So the first part of your question is the whole like celery is I think they call it a negative energy food. And yes, it's true. It sort of depends on how you count burning calories, because really when people say it takes, right, so that cup of celery that only had 16 calories, you know, what they're saying is that it takes more than 16 calories worth of energy to digest that food. But that's actually energy that normally would be included as part of your basal metabolic rate. So it can be a little bit misleading that way. But generally, yes. I mean, it is such a low-calorie food that in terms of the energy we're getting from celery, it's basically non-existent, right? It's such a small – I mean, think of how – much celery you would have to eat to just hit, say, 200 calories, which would be the 10% of your typical caloric intake of the day for an average, right, 2,000 calorie a day diet, right? So you're literally talking about like 15 cups of celery. I mean, that's probably two full, I think we call them heads, two full bunches. To, you know, the things that you buy that have the little rubber band around it.
Two stalks. Of those. I know they're, it's not a stock because I think, yeah, but a bulb. I stock, hear what you're saying.
Stock yeah. bundles, stock collections. That sounds, now I'm talking about the stock market. I'm not. But anyways, you would have to eat a lot of celery to hit that 10% of, you know, a significant contribution to caloric intake. So most diets, when you like a pure weight loss diet, would give celery sort of free food status. So you could eat as much celery as you want. You don't even need, it's 0 points, right? It does. You don't even have to count it. But lots of vegetables are like that, right? Lettuce is like that as well. Cucumber is like that as well. So it's certainly not the only food out there that is very low calorie for how much you get to chew. It's one of the reasons why I like celery personally so much. And also lettuce is because I know that it's giving my body lots of essential nutrients, and I know that the calories are not adding up, and I still have sort of like leftovers from having had binge eating disorder where I will have that compulsion to eat. And what I do now is when I feel that, I will eat, yeah, like the whole stock bundle of celery or a whole head of lettuce. Like that's how I satisfy that sort of compulsion while knowing that I'm now choosing a healthier food. And it is sort of how one of the ways that my health journey has sort of evolved and in terms of the mental health aspect. But the second part of your question was like, well, yeah, vitamins and minerals are great, but like that's not the part of celery that is curing all of your woes, right?
Yeah, there's a magical element there that's fairy dust, yeah. And you know, whatever, right?
And so that magical element is the phytochemicals, and celery actually is very, very rich in polyphenols, especially again sort of per calorie. And polyphenols, you know, again and again and again in the scientific literature, they're incredibly important antioxidants in our diets. And they have all these, they're anti-inflammatory, they're anti-aging, they can reduce cancer risk, they can reduce cardiovascular disease risk, they can help regulate blood sugar, they can be neuroprotective. And celery is actually, it's been an intense area of study in terms of identifying new polyphenols and new non-polyphenol phytochemicals like triterpenes. So celery actually, there's a whole pile of studies. I must have read 7 or 8 different studies that were just about doing, they were basically doing mass spectrometry on celery juice and finding these, you know, molecular peaks of phytochemicals and then working backwards trying to figure out what that chemical was. And then isolating it and trying to test its effects on like cells in a cell culture system. So there's actually some like really interesting research that's just about like, what are these cool new things in celery? And I would tell you what they are, but they literally have like it's a chemical name that is like 50 letters long. That's mostly like numbers and prime symbols. So I'm not even going to try, but It is really cool in the sense that it is one of, again, many vegetables and fruits and herbs and spices that are being studied for its phytochemical content. But the other thing is celery has a really impressive collection of very well-known and very well-studied polyphenols. So polyphenols that we can get from multiple different types of foods, but that we know are really, really important. And I thought it would be sort of fun to go through these individual polyphenols. Each one of these is actually like a class of molecules, and talk about the known benefits, you know, that have from these polyphenols that have been extensively studied that are all in celery. And I'm going to try to pronounce some very fun chemical names, and it might take me a few tries. So the first one is apigenin, and studies show that it can reduce inflammation, prevent cancer, prevent diabetes. It is neuroprotective. It can actually improve cognition and brain health. It actually has some pain-reducing properties. And through both interfacing with the HPA axis and the GABA neurotransmitter system, it can have a calming effect and has actually been shown to potentially help reduce pain. So that is a very, very exciting polyphenol. It also has caffeic acid, which people will say, caffeic, that sounds like coffee. Our dominant source of caffeic acid in our diets is actually from coffee, but it's found in lots of other vegetables, fruits, tea, other places. It is a great anti-inflammatory, potentially can prevent cancer. It actually can prevent the toxicity associated with cancer therapies like radiation therapy and chemotherapy. It has anti-diabetic effects. It can prevent premature aging. it has been shown to prevent neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's. That's why there's this collection of studies showing that moderate coffee consumption can be potentially very beneficial. And it's been shown to improve our energy levels after exhaustive exercise, which is really cool. The next polyphenol in celery that's really exciting is chlorogenic acid. This one has some strong anti-diabetic effects. It can help regulate blood sugar. It can also aid in weight loss. It's been also shown to reduce blood pressure, so impacting cardiovascular disease risk, enhancing mood, and it also aids in homocysteine detoxification, which would be particularly relevant to anybody with MTHFR gene variants. So that's a really cool one. Chrysoareal, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, reduces inflammation, actually has like a generally immune regulating effect, has been shown to prevent cancer genesis and prevent diabetes. P-cumaric acid reduces inflammation. Actually, it's been shown to reduce intestinal inflammation, specifically in models of inflammatory bowel disease. It overall regulates the immune system. This one has been shown to improve bone density, which is really cool, and potentially reduce risk of osteoporosis. It acts as an antidepressant. It protects the kidneys from damage. It can potentially prevent cancer. And it also can protect cells throughout the body from damage caused by drugs and alcohol. Very, very cool. All right, here's the big one. Cumaroquinic acid. It's not as well studied, but the studies that have been done on it, and I'm only saying it once, I'm not going to say that one again, shows that it increases the activity of an enzyme that our body naturally produces. That's one of our most important endogenous antioxidant enzymes. So it's one of our most important enzymes that we make to protect us from oxidants, called superoxide dismutase. So this particular polyphenol improves our body's antioxidant capacity by increasing the activity of enzymes that our bodies are making for that purpose. Ferulic acid is one of the most potent antioxidant polyphenols that have ever been studied. It reduces inflammation. Again, it can sort of both prevent cancer, but also prevent the toxicity associated with cancer therapy. It has anti-diabetic effects. It can prevent premature aging. It has been shown to be protective for the liver and the lungs in various sort of animal models of liver and lung injury. It also can potentially prevent neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's, and it's been shown to lower cardiovascular disease risk factors, not just blood pressure, but also cholesterol profiles. Super, super cool. Kemphrol, which I think is one of probably only a couple on this entire list that people will be like, oh yeah, I think I've heard that word before. Kemphrol is another strong anti-inflammatory. It also helps regulate the immune system. It also has anti-cancer effects. It's also a really good antimicrobial. It can potentially, say, kill bad bacteria like C. difficile. It can be antifungal. It also has anti-diabetic effects. Again, reducing cardiovascular disease risk factors, preventing against neurodegenerative disease. Kemphrol also has bone health improving properties and can aid in weight loss. So another exciting one. Luteolin reduces inflammation. There's actually been studies looking at it showing that it very particularly reduces vascular inflammation, which would then reduce risk of cardiovascular disease, including not just things like heart attacks, but also things like strokes or pulmonary embolisms, deep vein thrombosis, like all of those have their root in vascular inflammation. It not only regulates the immune system in general, but it's been shown to reduce allergic responses to allergens. So it actually reduces the histamine response when we're exposed to an allergen. It has been shown to protect the brain from damage and prevent neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. It again has the wonderful combo of reducing cancer risk, but also reducing the toxicity associated with cancer therapy. This is another one that reduces pain and has that calming effect through the GABA neurotransmitter system. And then finally, sort of the last sort of well-studied polyphenol in celery are tannins, which again, sort of are anti-inflammatory and help regulate the immune system. They have some really strong antimicrobial effects. They can, again, sort of have some anti-cancer effects. There's some interesting through their antimicrobial effects. They can potentially do things like prevent cavities and tooth decay. They also reduce cardiovascular disease risk factors. And one of the ways that they do that is by improving or sort of regulating blood clotting. So tannins also have a bunch of other benefits. So like celery has all of those things. And so when you sort of combine all of those things, like it's sort of no wonder that you see, you know, studies that have looked at celery, mostly looking at celery extract, which is different than celery juice. It's like a concentrated form of celery juice that really looks at, right, they try to basically get all of the phytochemicals out of the celery and concentrate them to make a celery extract. But there's mostly in animal models, although there are some human studies. But celery has been shown to prevent cardiovascular disease, liver diseases, urinary tract obstruction, gastric ulcers, gout. They've been shown to improve disease activity and inflammation in rheumatic disorders like rheumatoid arthritis. At least cell culture studies showing that they can inhibit cancer growth. Actually has been shown to improve male fertility through increasing spermatogenesis, which is kind of an interesting impact. Anti-diabetic effects, and this actually has been verified in humans that have been given, you know, diabetic humans given celery extract and shown that they have better blood sugar regulation, and neurodegenerative disease. Most of that, again, it's sort of in animal models. On top of that, on top of that big picture stuff, there's some interesting mechanistic stuff that would help explain a lot of the big picture stuff. So basically, it's a strong anti-inflammatory and antioxidant. It has some really beneficial neuroactive functions. So it can improve cognition by improving or increasing neuronal density. So it actually may help us. It has sort of like a neoplastic effect. So it can actually help our brains sort of repair after neuron damage, maybe after like a traumatic brain injury, although that hasn't been confirmed. The mechanism is there, but they need to do the actual experiments to confirm it. But it has, again, sort of some antidepressant activities. And then through boosting our antioxidant enzyme activity, there's actually been a few studies that have looked at, in this case, not celery extract, but celery juice in animals that are treated with chemotherapy drugs and shown that it preserves their antioxidant capacity, which is one of the reasons why chemotherapy is so harsh on the human body is because it basically completely suppresses our own immune system, including our own antioxidant capacity, because our antioxidant enzymes are kind of part of how the immune system's doing its job. And it makes us more susceptible to things like infection, but it also, you know, chemotherapy drives aging and it has, right, it's really rough on the human body. So anything that you can do to sort of improve immune function, to maintain antioxidant capacity during chemotherapy will, reduce the side effects of chemotherapy and potentially even improve the efficacy of chemotherapy. So that's a really exciting property of celery extract and celery juice. So like all together, there's a really compelling reason to consume celery. Like celery has a really like compelling, fascinating, exciting collection of polyphenols that have been well studied, that are known to provide us with great benefits on top of vitamins and minerals and fiber, all for very few calories. Like celery juice is great.
Yes, when I hear you say that, well, first of all, shocker, vegetables, polyphenols, healthy things. It's almost like we're, you know, repeating ourselves right. with this idea. But I think, you know, what is interesting to me is this idea of celery extract. And does that mean juice or does that mean like the whole vegetable? When you're looking at studies and the science of that, is that where the idea of celery juice is so much better than just consuming it? And what does the science actually say?
Yeah, so that's not actually where that data comes from. So celery extract, the way that they make it is they take whole celery. So that's typically the celery root, which you can buy celery root, right? It's also called celeriac. The celery stems and the celery leaves. So they take the whole plant. They blend it up usually with some kind of alcohol, methanol or ethanol. And then they sieve out the solids. And then they would freeze dry it. So they're evaporating all of the alcohol. And then they would reconstitute it typically with something like saline and then dose it, right? So they would then concentrate it because however much you started with, you're then freeze dry it to a powder and then you add a small amount of saline to turn it into a liquid. So that's how celery extract is typically made in these studies. Celery juice is typically made by throwing, you know, celery stalks with the leaves attached through a juicer, which is a little bit of a different process because it doesn't involve that alcohol extraction. So studies that have looked at how good celery juice is in terms of providing us with these all-important polyphenols have shown that it's very comparable to other vegetable juices or, say, apple juice. So when you throw something into a juicer, you don't get all of the liquid out. So celery juice yields about 79% juice. So the other 21% of the liquid in celery gets thrown out with the fiber, which it's that mass of stuff that's left over after you juice vegetables is called pumice. And what's interesting about celery is, and actually this is true for all vegetable juices and fruit juices, when you juice them, you break up a lot of the cells, a lot of the stuff, a lot of the beneficial stuff goes into the juice, but there are some nutrients and including some phytochemicals that are incorporated into the cellular matrix that are incorporated into, say, for example, the fiber molecules that are left behind. So when you juice celery, you only get about 56% of the flavones, which is the main class of polyphenols in celery, in the celery juice. The other 44% are trapped in the fiber, in the pumice that you would discard. So you're actually throwing out a lot.
Want to like really hone in on this and make sure that people understand, because I think it would also be reflective of most fruits and vegetables, right? Mm-hmm. Like this idea of juicing being a way to consume all of this nutrients in a simple, concentrated way. Yet you just said the science found that in a study, you are throwing away 44% of the beneficial qualities of that vegetable when you are juicing it versus consuming it whole, which includes a smoothie or putting it in a soup and mm-hmm. blending the soup up or, you know, all of those things, right? Because it's still a whole food form and that's where you're getting your bang for your buck, right?
Correct. So you cannot buy celery extract. You can get celery seed extract, which is a different thing. We're really talking about celery stalk and celery leaf extract in all of the studies that I'm talking about today. It is not something that is on the market. So what people are doing is they're juicing celery basically to try to replicate that benefit that's been seen in at least animal studies and cell culture studies, right? Like there's not a ton of human studies. And it's not the same thing. You are losing almost half of the beneficial phytochemicals in celery when you juice it. Now, the half that does make it into the juice is interesting. Some get into the juice more easily than others, including apigenin, luteolin, chrysoareol, right? Those things end up more in the juice than in the pumice, and they all have like really cool, exciting properties. So you do sort of selectively concentrate some of the polyphenols. And it is true that the polyphenols in a vegetable juice will be slightly more easily absorbed than in the whole food. Now, this does not take into account the activities of the gut microbiome. And this is really, really important. So most polyphenols are poorly absorbed. We only absorb directly about 5% of the polyphenols that we are consuming from vegetables, fruit, tea, coffee, chocolate, nuts, seeds, right? These are all great sources of polyphenols. We actually can't use them in their plant form generally because they tend to form fairly, they tend to be sort of locked in these large molecules. Some of them string together in these long chains. For example, tannins do this. They string together in long chains. So we need to break them apart into smaller molecules so that they can be absorbed into our body. And our digestive enzymes can break apart some of the types of chemical bonds that are in these large chemical structures of polyphenols, but most of that work is done by our gut bacteria. So our gut bacteria actually help to degrade polyphenols in the gut so they can be more easily absorbed and metabolize them. So they also will break apart a larger polyphenol and convert it into several different types of smaller polyphenols. So you can take, you know, a food is say rich in, quercetin or something like that. And our gut bacteria then turn that quercetin into 5 or 8 different smaller polyphenols that have beneficial activity and are maybe up to 10 times more easily absorbed than that quercetin was in the first place. So a huge amount of the benefits that we get from high polyphenol consumption is actually mediated through the gut microbiome. So how do you drive gut microbiome activity? Well, you feed them fiber. That's their preferred fuel source. So they are going to be healthier, more active if we're consuming fiber. So even though the polyphenols in a vegetable juice may be slightly better absorbed because they're smaller molecules than in the whole plant. When you juice a vegetable, you blend, you basically are breaking apart cells so that enzymes that are naturally inherent in that vegetable will break apart some of the polyphenols. So you're breaking apart some of those types of chemical bonds, making smaller molecules, which are more easily absorbed. But they're still not as easily absorbed as if you then give them to our gut bacteria to continue degrading and continue metabolizing to create this entire spectrum of beneficial polyphenols. So if you want your gut bacteria to do that job for you, then it's far preferable to consume the whole vegetable where you're getting the fiber to feed the gut bacteria, get them going, and then they're also metabolizing the polyphenols while they're eating fiber and they're dividing and doing all that great stuff and they're super happy because you're eating this vegetable-rich diet, that's far preferable than the relatively minor improvement in absorption that you get from purely juicing a vegetable.
I didn't hear your mic drop.
Sorry. Better?
No, I just think I don't quite understand why this keeps coming up because to me it's been an obvious thing, but I think it's just so pervasive in our culture and the idea that it sounds simple, right? Like you're concentrating the good parts of the vegetable when you do it. And, you know, like we didn't even get into, especially if you're going to add fruit to this kind of, beverage, what that's doing to how your body is processing it. And I think, you know, if someone is having health issues and they're looking towards a magical solution, the idea of, well, if I can do this, then I'm getting, you know, concentrated aspects of these vegetables in there. They're genuinely trying to help their own health. And ultimately, it's probably easier to sip a drink than to sit and chew a bunch of celery. I, unlike you, Sarah, am not evolved to that respect. So I get it. But I think also for me, that means, okay, I've got to come up with another way that is palatable and that does work for me to get more vegetables in. And, you know, every step that someone takes towards consuming more of those whole food sources is beneficial to their health. And we've got, you know, like a 27-part series at this point, right, on our love of vegetables. If, you know, you're just listening to this show and you're like, well, great. You know, I'm not Sarah. I'm not going to sit around and just eat celery while I'm watching TV. So, although that's a great life choice, my friends, and more kudos to you. You know, we just got some celery in our Hungry Harvest. I think like last week, and it was a ton of celery. And Matt and I both looked at each, we're like, what do we do with this? Because as you noted, we just use it as like a aromatic. We don't do a bunch with celery. So now it's kind of like, all right, we need to figure out how to eat this celery, and it might be Netflix and celery. Maybe that's the next, juicing solution is, we need to start the Netflix and celery trend.
That could be the next big thing. I think we need to start a hashtag.
Listen, if souping was effective in January 2018, then it's February now for our listeners, but we're recording this in January 2019. We can change it up. We can Netflix and celery.
Yeah. Don't bother with popcorn. Celery is where it's at.
Or roasted okra.
Or, you know what? Here's the thing. Lots and lots of vegetables. Like celery. So I think we've made a very compelling case for whole celery being more beneficial than celery juice. So if you want to take advantage of all these wonderful polyphenols that celery has to offer, it's far better to just find ways to eat more celery. And whether that means it's your new favorite snack food, your new favorite hashtag Netflix and celery, or you start adding it more to soups or stews, or if you're a smoothie person, you start adding some celery to your smoothies, right? There's lots of ways that we can up our vegetable intake. And as Stacy said, we've talked about this approximately 6,000 times on the show up until this point. But celery is not particularly unique, and it's not even in that parsley family. It's not even the best member, like in terms of all of these wonderful polyphenols. There was one study that compared celery juice with parsley juice and showed that parsley had sort of a similar amount, right? It was, instead of 79% juice, it was 72% juice that was yielded. So more of the actual juice was trapped, but more of the flavones were extracted. So 64% compared to 56%. And when they actually measured the flavone concentration of the finished celery juice versus the finished parsley juice, parsley had 10 times more of these flavone polyphenols than the celery juice. So I'm not saying that everyone should now start their mornings off with parsley juice instead, but celery is a great nutrient-dense, phytochemical-rich vegetable. But as I also mentioned at the top of the show, there has been research done into coffee and tea and cocoa and cinnamon and turmeric and cloves and all kinds of different herbs, mint and oregano and rosemary and sage and tons of different fruits and vegetables, kale and broccoli and carrots and beets and berries of all kinds and grapes and garlics and onions and mushrooms and olives and sea vegetables. Like, there has been tons of research done on the beneficial phytochemicals in these vegetables and fruit. And it's really probably just reinforcing all of the huge amount of research showing the more fruits and vegetables we consume, the healthier we are, right? We can see that all of these phytochemicals have really, really diverse and profound benefits for human health. And the more of them we consume, and we're getting them from fruits and vegetables and things like fresh herbs and spices, the more of them that we consume, the lower our risk of pretty much every chronic illness. Like, it really does seem to benefit every single system. I've not yet seen a paper that said eating more phytochemicals was bad in any way. At worst, a paper is like, oh, it's only a small effect, right? Like, that's the most underwhelming results. Like, it's only slightly beneficial. It's still beneficial. And so celery is a fantastic choice, and it's a relatively inexpensive vegetable. And it's also, it is a great vessel. It's a great thing to just, throw. I mean, it's aromatic, and it's a flavor that works in a lot of different situations, and you can pretty much throw it into anything. But in terms of the whole, is celery juice going to cure all of your woes? Is it going to cure your autoimmune disease and give you all kinds of mental energy and make your GI system work perfectly? All of those things, there's no science to support celery juice as being beneficial compared to whole celery, nor is celery particularly special in the grand scheme of vegetables and fruits. So really, the end result is don't waste your money on an expensive juicer and 6 metric tons of celery every week, and instead just work on eating more vegetables. Do I need to drop the mic again?
I feel like our podcast title might need to be changed to Just Eat More Vegetables.
I know, but you know all the people who are trying to figure out if celery juice is a real thing.
No. I don't mean the show title. I mean the podcast title.
Like the podcast title. Paleo View, that's silly. We should just be like, we should just call it Just Veggies Are Awesome.
Yes. Well, thank you for taking the time to dive in to the science on that. I enjoy having information so that when people suggest or say it's helped them, I can share back with knowledge and helpful information versus a puzzled look on my face. And here's the thing is, if someone is not eating vegetables and they start juicing celery, like, I can see how that would be helpful and beneficial to their health, because now they're getting 56% more than they were before,
right,
versus 100% more, right? So it's, I just want to be clear, and I won't speak for you in this, but if you have a friend who, like, you listen to the show and you're having soup for breakfast and you know that what you're doing is great for your health, like, be proud of that. But also, if you have a friend who doesn't eat a lot of vegetables and the best solution that they can come up with at the time is to juice some celery, wouldn't be my approach to say, don't do that anymore, because they're not going to get that benefit. It might be, hey, I heard that smoothies actually give you 44% more of the beneficial qualities of juicing. Have you tried this great smoothie recipe? I feel like sometimes we get, and maybe not we, because our listeners are amazing, but I feel like there's a lot of dogmatic mindset in the health community. And it's like, all or nothing, right is wrong, black and white, blah, 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 right? And so I hope that the information that we share allows people to think a little more broadly, a little more compassionately. They become educated on something, which then enables them to have better conversation with people and not just, well, you're wrong and I'm right. Because that mindset is just not productive for anybody.
No, I agree completely. And I think the follow-up question that I think is most natural when you start talking about whether it's celery juice or any other vegetable juice, and talk about the limitations of juice fasts, for example, right? They are inherently nutrient deficient, but they are typically providing a lot of nutrients that people who do juice fasts don't get on a regular basis, right? So if you eat a typical Western diet and then you go on a juice fast, you're going to be missing out on some really important nutrients over the long term on that juice fast, but you're also going to be, you know, flooding your system with nutrients that you are probably deficient in because of all of the wonderful phytochemicals, vitamins, and minerals in all of those vegetables and fruit, if it's a juice fast that includes fruit juices as well. And that's why people feel better, right? They feel better in part, sometimes it's juice displacing something that was not helping them. So if you're, you know, having a vegetable juice for breakfast instead of a bowl of cereal, that is going to have a lot more nutrition, and probably, you know, that cereal probably didn't have a ton of fiber, depending on what it was. Like, it probably didn't have a ton of nutrition, and that celery juice does. It is swapping out a food that wasn't doing you any favors for one that does have some compelling nutrition. And I think that the reason why so many people, you know, will say they feel so much better when they start eating these vegetable juices is because even though they're not getting everything that a whole vegetable would provide their body, they are getting something that their body needs that they're probably not getting enough of on a regular basis. So, you know, if vegetable juice is your entry into more vegetables, then I'm going to say, you know, great. But like you, Stacey, I'm going to be like, but it would be better if it was a smoothie, right? I, you know, like, and getting the whole, you know, the everything that those vegetables have to offer us instead of just a fraction of it. But I think that what our listeners can take home from this entire episode is when something sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Shocker.
Right?
Well, listeners, thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Paleo View. If you enjoyed it, we would love for you to leave a review and share it with people in your life so that we can reach a broader audience and help them learn more about the science of health and all of the things that we love here on the show. So we appreciate your sharing, whether it's in social media or just sending a quick text or email to someone that you think would love the show. And if it's the first time you're listening, thanks for tuning in. And we will put some links in the show notes of our websites, thepaleomom.com and realeverything.com, where you can find links to some of our other top favorite vegetable podcasts. This is a series that has, as we've mentioned, become both wonderfully common on this podcast as well as beloved by our listeners. And I think you can see we always try to approach things from a scientific perspective, and we hope that it's helpful for you. And we wish you a wonderful week, and we will, of course, talk to you again soon.
We'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
I'm going to rely on Skype. Skype's good. I'm going to knock on wood and I'm so distracted by my cat who just decided to walk in the room with a toy in her mouth, making all kinds of noise as she, I'm not sure if she's babying this toy, if she thinks it's her baby, or if she's trying to kill it, but she's being very loud.
She wants you to know that she's taking care of it.
Right. Loudly.
Well,
there's my cat again. I am going to throw something at you.